Episode 838, My Strength is My Story with Rebecca Gregory, Taking My Life Back.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive by, T-Mac on the radio.
Happy, happy day. It is the best day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series. We have on an incredible, sweet, adorable woman. Oh my goodness, she will warm your heart. Yes, I love her to death already. Her name is Rebecca Gregory, and I cannot wait to share her story with you. Her strength is beyond measurable. Just stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, maybe your friends and family of Rebecca, I want to personally welcome you here. It's no accident that you have landed on Create Your Now's doorstep. If you haven't already had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Now, let's get to the real story today. We have a hero amongst us. During our girl time, Rebecca Gregory shared her inspirational story that required more than physical strength. She needed God in order to survive this day. Rebecca and I talked about her story of faith, determination, and surviving the Boston Marathon bombing, where she wrote in her brand new book, Taking My Life Back. I promise today you will be blessed with hope, love, and resilience. This is a long interview, but one worth listening to every second. Without further ado, Rebecca Gregory, Taking My Life Back. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today you're in for an extraordinary treat. We have a woman here, Rebecca Gregory. Oh my goodness, her story is truly about her strength is her story. I cannot wait for you to meet her. Rebecca Gregory is an extraordinary wife, mother, woman whose life was forever changed on April 15th of 2013 at the Boston Marathon. This act of terrorism played out on U.S. soil may have claimed her leg, but did not conquer her spirit. Rebecca Gregory is an overcomer in my eyes. She now impacts people with her powerful message of faith and hope as a motivational speaker all across the country. You can read her story in her brand new book. Oh, I'm so excited. Taking My Life Back. My story of faith, determination, and surviving the Boston Marathon bombing. Rebecca is a blessing to so many, especially her adorable husband, Chris, her son, Noah, and her miracle daughter. Welcome, 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 Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Oh, I am just, I have read your book, and I got to tell you, I have experienced every emotion. There were times I wanted to burn a few of your words.
Yes.
You know, and I'm sure as you wrote them, I can only imagine. And there were times that I was just, I wanted to hold you so tight and just say, girl, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do to actually put everything into words and on paper and just say, wow, all of this stuff has really happened to me, you know, but it's been a very cathartic and very therapeutic process too. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do it.
Oh, well, it is truly my honor and privilege to have you here. So I know people are already just kind of chomping, going, what? Boston Marathon bombing survivor? Tell us more. I want to get into that, but we got to see what's making you smile brighter right now. What is Rebecca up to these days?
Oh, my goodness. So I just came off a two-week book tour, going around the country promoting and marketing my book. So that's been really exciting. I'm getting ready to celebrate my daughter's very first birthday next month.
Aww.
And so in the midst of traveling and speaking and then doing the book tour, we are planning or in full planning mode. And so that's been really exciting. And, you know, I feel like I'm in a great chapter of my life right now, and I'm so blessed. And what I've learned, and one of the reasons that I wrote the book in the first place, was just because you're going through something and it's a hard part of your life, but that's what it is. It's a chapter. Mm. And so some of the hardest, toughest chapters lead us to the most beautiful ones of all. And I am so blessed to be right where I am today.
Oh, that is eloquently spoken, Rebecca. And remind me, because you have a very unique spelling for your daughter's name. How do you pronounce it?
Riley.
It is Riley. Okay, great, because I kept going back and forth, and I was like, I have a different spelling with my name, and I was like, if I butcher that, I am just going to, oh, I can't do this to this sweet little miracle baby, and we'll talk more about her later, but oh my gosh, she is precious, absolutely
Thank
a doll.
You.
Oh, and I know she's a miracle baby to you.
Yes, absolutely, in every way.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that life is moving, and you have a beautiful smile on your face.
Thank you.
Let's go back a little bit. How did you end up at the Boston Marathon?
Well, people think I was running in it. And first off, I have to just go ahead and clear that up right now, because I was on the sidelines eating chocolate-covered pretzels, wondering why anyone in their right mind would run 26.2 miles for fun.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking that day, like, oh my gosh, these people have trained to run this race. And it was like, you know, the race of all races. And so it was just amazing. And I was there. I was dating a guy at the time, and his mom had actually qualified to run, which was spectacular.
Uh-huh.
And we were there. It was my birthday weekend, my first time ever in the city of Boston. We had caught a Red Sox game. We toured the city, and we were all packed up and ready to go home as soon as the marathon concluded. So it was just like a birthday celebration weekend.
Wow. And then all of a sudden, now you had been there, though. You were near the finish line, correct?
I was. We had made our way from the 17-mile marker, where we were tracking our runner on our phones, and we had an app that did that. And so we were holding up our signs, and everyone was excited. And I remember my little boy Noah, who was 5 at the time, mm-hmm. he was just so happy, and he had a homemade sign that he had made just for the marathon. It was so cute. And someone in our group said, hey, we need to make our way closer to the finish line so we can actually see our friend cross. And that's what we proceeded to do. And the crazy thing, though, is when you're watching a marathon, it's almost like you're running it, too, because mm-hmm. to keep up with the person that you're trying to go see. And it was just, I remember it being so exhausting. And then Noah was with me, and he had gotten really bored watching all the runners pass by. And there's only so many runners you can watch when you're 5 years old before you're just over it. And so he actually was sitting on my feet, because I had told him to sit down on my feet and play in the rocks like he was a scientist. And mm-hmm. there were no rocks because we were on asphalt, but to a 5-year-old, that was cool. And that's where Noah was when the bomb in the backpack went off 3 feet behind us.
Mm. And life just stopped.
It did. Yeah. It literally blew up in front of my face. Mm-hmm. And I remember everything, and that's one of the things that people have a hard time realizing, because they think we were automatically knocked out by the blast, and it wasn't the case. And so I remember my body being pinned to the ground. I remember my bones laying next to me on the sidewalk, and all of the nails and BBs and ball bearings and everything that these two brothers packed into these pressure cooker bombs,
mm-hmm.
and just laying in my own pool of blood and other people's body parts around me. And I just thought, this is the day that I'm going to die. I'm dying right here on the street.
Mm. And at that point, you didn't even know where your son was.
I had no idea. All I knew was that Noah had been sitting down before everything happened. And I wanted to know. And I just started praying. I said, God, if this is it for me, then take me. But let me know that Noah is okay.
Mm.
And I was able to see Noah, which was the first miracle in all of this, out of my peripheral vision. And I could tell that he was not injured anywhere near the extent that I was injured. And so for me, I was thinking, okay, Noah's all right. So mm-hmm. no matter what happens to me, that's fine. But then I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I really am going to die today, because there's my sign.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was something I can't even put into words. It was a true war scene. It really was.
Oh. And I can't imagine. I can't. And I don't think, honestly, anybody wants to try to imagine.
No.
That you were placed on a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you were there celebrating, enjoying the freedoms that we celebrate here in the United States.
Yep.
And something horrific and a tragedy and terrorism comes into play to destroy a lot of lives and injure a lot of people.
There was 500,000 people there that day, so 500,000. And I ended up being as close to the bomb as some people that lost both of their legs, as some of the people that didn't make it. And that's really tough, because then there's the whole survivor's guilt factor of, why did another little boy have to die, but then my little boy, who was almost the same age, lived, you know? Mm-hmm. And then why did I only lose one of my legs versus losing two? And so there's just so many things you can ask yourself, and, you know, you can go and ask, what if all this happened? What if I had just stayed home like I was supposed to, because I almost didn't get to come to the marathon because I was behind in my work and I was afraid to leave? And it was just like, I look back and I can think a million what ifs, but I try not to, because it happened. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about what I do moving forward from here.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to pick up your own copy of her brand new book, Taking My Life Back, My Story of Faith, Determination, and Surviving the Boston Marathon Bombing. In your book, you say that you're not a victim.
No.
And you're a survivor, and I call you an overcomer. that is something to me that rings even higher because of your faith, of your walk. So I want to go back a little bit, because in your life, this was not just your first oopsie.
Yeah,
you didn't just, you know, you've had a few markings along the way, just a few. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the OPD.
Mm-hmm. Obedient Preacher Daughter.
Yeah.
That's what it stands for. I was raised as a preacher's daughter, and my dad was an evangelist, and he traveled all over the world preaching and telling people of God's love, but behind closed doors, and when the church doors were not open, he was a different person. And so he came home and abused me and my mom, and that was the life that I knew as a very early, you know, very young child. Mm-hmm. And I had to distinguish the difference between what God's love really was and what this man was preaching to me. And I remember it being so difficult, because we would sit there, you know, right in the front row with our little matching dresses and the bows in our hair, because I had two younger sisters, thinking, you know, what is wrong with me that I can't understand this part of my life? Because he was preaching and his sermons were so beautiful. And then I almost started to think that I was the problem, because how am I, you know, mad at somebody that is so clearly loved by the congregation? And so that was really difficult in my life. The obstacles definitely started then for me.
Mm-hmm. And how did you end up surviving that? Because it wasn't like you were there. I mean, it didn't happen. That abuse wasn't just like 1 or 2 years. It was a good period of time.
It was. It was the bigger portion of my childhood. And my mom was the reason I think I survived that. And just her courage and bravery to finally say, you know, the lives of my children are enough to make me leave the situation. And our security was put in question, and, you know, our safety. And so my mom decided that that wasn't going to happen anymore. And then, you know, came the whole divorce process, and it was so nasty. And I remember so many nights where my mom was just crying her eyes out. And I saw her endure conditions that were so much harsher than anyone ever would deserve. And it was so difficult, but my mom maintained this strength and bravery that you really only find in Jesus Christ. And so I know that me being a Christian now is my mom, because she made me who I am today, and she instilled God's love in me, even though the scenery was all wrong. Mm-hmm. But my mom was still faithful in her walk and her Christianity, and it made me want to be like her.
Oh, that's beautiful. I mean, when your mom listens to this, she's going to be crying. You know that, don't you?
I've made my mom cry a lot. I feel really bad for that.
You know what? But you may have made your mom cry a little bit, but right now she's crying tears of joy. Because as much as you've been through, Rebecca, God has been there, and he says, I'm not finished with you yet.
Yes.
You got a lot more left on this earth to do with your life, and I've got bigger plans. You may have these dreams, but I got bigger ones for you.
Yes. It's been amazing to see, because I feel like for once in my life, I've been totally obedient in every way, or trying to. And I'm ashamed to say that it's taken me this long to figure it out. But I do realize that God's plans are so much greater than anything that we can ever fathom. And so when you put your trust fully in God, and when you say, okay, my life has blown up, what do I do now? Where do I go from here? It's just amazing to see how he works. And I am a better person than I was 4 years ago. I'm a better person than I was yesterday, because every day I try to be more like him. And I ask myself how I can help be a platform and a way for people to know Christ or get to know Christ. And I know that I can't be the solution, but if I could be part of that bridge, then what else would I want to do?
Yeah, I say amen. Praise the Lord. Let's, you know, just bring it on, because you are a blessed child of God for sure, Rebecca.
Thank you. I just feel very blessed with this opportunity. I feel like I was 3 feet from a bomb, and there's obviously a bigger plan for my life because of that. Yeah. And I didn't die that day. And so I want to live a meaningful life, and I want to do everything that I can to help someone else see things that I should have seen before. I didn't realize how much I took my life for granted just from just getting caught up in the routine of that we go through. And so instead of just surviving my life now, I'm living every moment. And that's a beautiful thing.
That is a beautiful thing. You're not just surviving, you are thriving. And it all started 4 years ago, because 4 years ago, almost to the date, this past Monday, was the 121st marathon, Boston Marathon run. And praise the Lord, no incidences. And you know, everything. And I can't imagine, because you ran the Boston Marathon. You went back, was it 2 years after?
2 years after, yeah, I had gotten my prosthetic leg in January of 15, and I decided that I was going to do everything on a fake leg that I didn't do on a real leg. And so that meant the same girl that was eating those chocolate-covered pretzels on the sidelines started training to run in the marathon. And not only was I training to run, but I was learning how to walk again on a fake leg. And so it was some of the most difficult months of my life, and there were many days where I wanted to throw my prosthetic across the room, and many days that I did. But I got up to 16 miles 2 weeks before, and I was so excited, and I was just on this runner's high, and I finally got it. I was like, this is why people run. Okay. And I came home, and I took my prosthetic leg off, and I had busted the end of my remaining limb completely open. Oh. And so here I am. I had just come off this wonderful high, and then all of a sudden, I'm back to square one. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, like, what else? And I went to my doctor, and he's, like, shaking his head, and he's going, oh, Rebecca, because I'm a little stubborn, and they know that.
Surely not.
Yeah. And so he said, you absolutely cannot run in this marathon. You can't do it. And I said, oh, no. Yes, I can. And so what we agreed upon, or what I said, is that I was going to run the last 3.2 miles. And for me, 3.2 miles meant the number of months that I had not only learned how to run again, but how to walk. And it was really not about the miles at all. It was about crossing the finish line. Mm-hmm. And I say that I took my life back that day. And I feel like I continue to take my life back every day that I decide I'm stronger than all of this.
You are stronger. And as an amputee, and you call your prosthetic leg Felicia.
Yes, I do. She's a member of our family. I mean, yeah.
Do you ever lose her?
All the time. That's like the biggest ongoing question in my house. I'm like, babe, have you seen my leg today? Noah, have you seen it? Because when I'm home, I'm in a wheelchair generally.
Okay.
And so, you know, if I'm coming in the house and I go into the living room and I take my leg off because it's killing me and I get in my wheelchair, then I forget that my leg is, you know, in that room. And so there are many days that I am looking for it, and my husband and my son also. So we make a joke about it. Everything is kind of comical. And my son calls me his robot mom. Aww. And it's just one of those, it's our life now. Mm-hmm. And we have to embrace it fully. And so part of that is being able to joke about it.
Well, you beam with absolute joy and vibrancy, Rebecca. And this day, April 15th of 2013, did not take your spirit whatsoever?
My friend said it best the other day, and he said April 15th could have been the day that was etched on your tombstone, and it wasn't. And so with that, you go on and you live your life to the absolute fullest. Mm. And that's just what I'm trying to do. And it's been so incredible because I've been able to meet so many people and hear their stories. And I'm stronger because of it, because every time I go into an, or I talk in front of an audience when I'm speaking, and I'm always inspired too. And it's like, for what I give, I get back tenfold. And that's an amazing feeling. And I'm very honored to be able to do that.
Mm. That is an honor, definitely. And those stories are so meaningful. I mean, that's why we have this series here at Create Your Now. My strength is my story. A lot of people in your situation, Rebecca, would just want to run. Just like, let me hide. Let me hide in the shadows. And in fact, you name one of your chapters that, Hiding in the Shadows.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing, though, that you said, not me. Part of your determination, your stubbornness, however you want to look at it. No, I think it's absolutely awesome what you're doing. And, of course, you all will want to pick up your own copy of her brand new book, Taking My Life Back, My Story of Faith, Determination, and Surviving the Boston Marathon Bombing. Well, you had mentioned, you know, we talked about Felicia. For those who are just tuning in, that's her prosthetic leg. Because they might think it's a little weird. We're, you know, Felicia,
right.
Who's
this
Felicia?
This alter ego.
That's right. They'll be like scratching their head. This is really a strange, you know, coffee chat.
Yeah.
So with Felicia, though, and as an amputee, it's very interesting because as I was reading your book, you had talked about how your leg would be sore and that when you're home now, you're mainly in a wheelchair. I think people kind of have this, idea that when you're an amputee, you always wear your prosthetics and you walk around just like every normal person, but you still have feeling in your leg and it still gets sore.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is a big misconception, because if you see me out, especially, you know, walking through the airport or walking through the grocery store, I look just like a normal person. And if I had jeans on or something, you would never even be able to tell that I had a prosthetic leg. And I've worked really hard to be able to do that. But it doesn't take away the fact that 65 times they've gone in and operated on me to repair the damage of the bomb, and that there's still pieces of metal and shrapnel in my leg. In fact, I have a BB that's getting ready to need to come out because it has just come to the surface. And so I have to get that surgically removed. And that's just kind of a part of the whole being blown up by a bomb thing I've learned over the past 4 years. There's just different things like that you have to accept. But being an amputee has its own set of issues. And so when I made the decision to amputate, I knew what I was taking on, but then some of it I didn't, because it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's a fake leg and you can only leave it on for so long until you're just throwing Felicia across the room.
Enough with her already.
Yes. We have a love-hate relationship.
When she's working well, it's a love relationship. Otherwise, right. She's out the door.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
What would you tell people who truly don't understand and don't get it? Because, I mean, it's unfortunate, but we see amputees more nowadays than I did, because I'm older than you, so I can say this. When I was growing up, we didn't have, I mean, you know, technology has changed. You know, people didn't lose just a limb. They lost their life. Mm-hmm. And nowadays they can lose a limb or two or whatever and still survive and still thrive and live a life. What would you tell people who really, truly just don't understand to kind of open up that doors of conversation so they don't feel uncomfortable approaching somebody who is an amputee?
I mean, technology has been amazing. And if I was going to be an amputee, this is a good time to be an amputee because of everything that's at our disposal. Mm-hmm. But I think that the story behind it is what's interesting to me, because I see amputees all the time now, and it's almost like a club. Like if someone sees me at the airport, which I'm there often, and they say, oh, yeah, me too. And they pull out their pant leg and we're like, oh, okay. It's like a club you never want to be in, but yes. They think that it's cool because, you know, you have a comrade in it.
Right.
But the story behind what has happened to them and what they continue to do afterwards is what's incredible, because when you have an amputation, and I can only speak for people below the knee because I don't know what it's like to not have my knee, and I know that that's a whole different ball game. Mm-hmm. But mine feels like if I have an arm that's asleep and you have that tingly feeling all of a sudden, and then you, it's almost like if you have your elbow and you're grinding it on some kind of hard surface and it's still tingling like that. That's kind of what it feels like when my leg is in that carbon fiber socket. And I have a lot of what they call phantom pain. And so it still feels like my foot and my ankle are still there, even though it's not there at all. And so as I'm talking to you right now, I can move my toes, if you will, but mm-hmm. obviously I don't have toes to move. And right. it's really strange. But I think every amputation is different, too, because the amount of phantom pain that people have is different. The amount of pain in general people have is different. For me, it's a very long process because I did try to do limb salvage for a year and a half before they actually took my leg off. And I wanted to amputate in Boston, but the doctors encouraged me to try to save it first. And we did, and obviously it didn't work. And I said it was like a bad boyfriend. I needed to get it out of my life. But I think everyone's scenarios are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's good information to have because it's kind of an awkward situation. You know, people, I mean, I think about children, you know, and I can remember when my children were much younger and they would see things and I wanted them to be courteous. I wanted them to be respectful and kind. But at the same time, I knew that sometimes those questions need to be asked, but how do you ask them appropriately? And so thank you for kind of making us the quote unquote normal people feel a little more normal around amputees.
My friend Jessica said it best. She's a survivor of the marathon bombings as well. And she said, we call them TABS now. It's temporarily able-bodied because you never know what's going to happen in your life. So, you know, and for me, I don't consider myself disabled. I don't consider myself handicapped. It's all in how I look at it. For me, when I put on my prosthetic leg or I'm in a wheelchair, it is a daily reminder of how short my life really is. And so I want to live it to the fullest instead of worrying about things that I can't change because I can't change that my leg is gone. I can't change that I spend the majority of my time at home in a wheelchair, but I can change how I look at it and my perspective, and I count my blessings and I don't count my problems.
Oh, I count my blessings and I don't count my problems. Yes, love it, love it. Okay, so you're laying there. You've got everything around you. All the shrapnel is around you. You're torn from the inside out, literally.
Yes.
There's chaos all around you. You eventually end up at the Boston Hospital. And you were there for a long period of time.
It was 56 days I was in the hospital initially.
Mm. When you found out, because the FBI came to visit you.
Yes. Life is not boring.
No, it's not. I mean, could we not have a nicer happy ending story? But we'll talk about happy ending later because I know you talk about that too in your book. It's not about happy endings. But when the FBI came in, and this was kind of my moment that I kind of wanted to burn a few of those things, thinking that the one of the brothers was in the hospital when you were there.
Yes. When they had done the shootout and he got injured, they took the other brother to our hospital. And not only was he in the hospital, but he was on the floor, the same floor as I was. Mm. And so when I was wheeled into surgery every other day, we would have to be wheeled past the guards of this room that was holding this brother. And my mom said that that was the first time she became really angry about it because she had to walk past where this guy who had done this to us was being taken care of by some of the same nurses and doctors that were taking care of us, all of the other survivors. So that's a part where you question why, you know, why is this continuing to unfold like this? And it's like we would get one glimmer of good hope and then at the same time that would happen. And so in those moments it's difficult to just maintain that peace and say, okay, we're still here. It's okay. It's going to be all right. God's got us. But even during that time, you know, we prayed a lot. And there's one song that I mentioned in my book, and it was so true, from the Sidewalk Prophets. And it says, if I need to be still, give me peace for the moment. And that was what I needed to do at that time. My life had been 180 miles an hour ever since I could even think of. And all of a sudden it came to a screeching halt. And that was so hard. But it was God telling me that I needed to be still. And with being still, I learned so much about me and so much about the world around me. And so even in those moments, those difficult moments where he was brought in, it taught me lessons that I couldn't even comprehend then.
Mm, that is amazing. And it's kind of tragic, too, when you think about it, that we have to be taken to sometimes the battlefield.
Yes.
To be shaken up just to be still.
I'd rather not get blown up by a bomb, but I guess if it had to happen.
Well, at least he did spare your life. I mean,
that's,
you know,
right.
He did remove you from that. But with that, of course, I'm sure there's something within you that says, gosh, he's got some high expectations for me.
Yeah.
I got a lot to live up to.
It's a responsibility now, mm-hmm. and it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's very humbling to have a platform, to be able to do everything that I'm doing right now. In college, if you were to ever ask me if I was going to be a public speaker, I would have been like, you're insane. I hated that class. I was shaking from head to toe, and I remember I couldn't remember anything that I was saying, and it was just awful. Like, I dreaded going to that hour. But now it's such a passion of mine, and I feel so grateful to be able to tell my story, not because it's my story, but because of everything that comes from it, and all the people that come up to me afterwards telling me their own stories of pain and fear and God working in their lives through their toughest moments. And it's just a really wonderful thing to experience. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else with my life now.
Mm. Well, all of us go through struggles and troubles and challenges, not necessarily ending up on the battlefield like you did, the Boston Marathon bombing of 2013. But there are times that, you know, we wonder, where do we gain that strength from? And I can remember reading in your book, you talk about your dangle time.
Yeah.
And it got me because I thought, you know what? People complain about health and wellness. They don't want to, you know, they want to lose weight. They want to get a better job. They, you know, maybe they want a better house even, or a different car or whatever, but they complain more than do more. They're, you know, they're talk, no action, or they'll sit back and say, I'm praying about it. I'm just going to wait. When
right.
I was reading your dangle time, I couldn't help but think, okay, there's no way I can complain anymore. Talk a little bit about dangle time.
So dangle time was the few minutes that I said I could come up for air a day. I had just had a major surgery. It was right before I was released to go home, and they took a piece of back muscle out of my left side to put in my left foot that had a hole blown completely through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was something that had to happen in order for me to regain some of that function in my foot. And so what they did was I had to have my foot above my heart 24/7 all the time. I mean, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week above my heart. And so I could either lay down in a bed or be in a wheelchair with my leg propped up. And finally, after weeks of this, the doctor said, okay, you can have 5 whole minutes a day where you can lower your leg down and that's it. And it was like, back then, 5 minutes felt like I had hit the lottery. Like, oh my gosh, I lived for those 5 minutes a day. I mean, it was just wonderful because here I was back at my parents' house of all things. I had been a single mom working. We had our own house. We had our own life. Noah and I were doing great before this. You know, we had a good life.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, life blows up. I've spent 56 days in the hospital. I'm having more surgeries than I can even count. And I'm back home with my parents when I'm released from the hospital. And so life as I knew it was just completely different. And I remember laying in the bed and my leg propped up and I'm looking at myself. I was 79 pounds when I was let go from the hospital. So I looked like, you know, I was being sent home to die, not to live and recover. Mm-hmm. And it was just incredible because I could do nothing with my life, but I had those 5 minutes. And when I realized, though, that while doing nothing, I could really do everything because I was focusing on the wrong things at that time and I was letting my fear get the best of me, those 5 minutes became a victory. And so then it was 5 minutes more a couple months later and a couple months later. And so it was small victories, but I was working towards the ultimate goal of taking my life back and deciding that this is not going to define who I am.
Mm. So if you're complaining that you don't want to go do your strength training routine, I'm just saying stop complaining. Because I cannot imagine. I mean, seriously, when I read that part in the book, I stopped and I think I read over that to make sure I had the picture in my head.
Yeah.
Of you sitting, I mean, in a bed, I could see how you can have it elevated, but I'm like, she can't be in that position all the time. I mean, you think about how much you move in a recliner just by watching a 1 hour of your favorite show and how we shift and move, you know, and you couldn't do that.
No. Or how you get up to go somewhere else, get a snack, use the bathroom. No, it was, there was none of that. And so it, those 5 minutes were, I mean, every second I was so thankful for, because that is a time in my life where I had to be completely still. There was nothing else I could do.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I'm just telling you, you're an extraordinary, extra, extra, extraordinary woman in my eyes. That's why I call you the overcomer. Okay. Well, I don't want to pass this up because Noah was there.
Yes.
And that to me is huge too, because we have a lot of listeners that are moms, grandmas, aunts, and we've got guys that listen too, but primarily they're women. And there's just something about your child, that attachment, it's a part of you.
Yes.
You talk in your book and you bring it up about PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have a foundation, Rebecca's Angels.
I do. Yeah, we're starting it up right now.
Yeah, that is awesome. We're going to have that information definitely in the show notes. So if you all want to support Rebecca's Angels, be sure to check out the show notes, or you can go to createyournow.com and you will get all that information there on Rebecca's episode page there. It's very exciting, but I wanted you to talk a little bit about Noah's experience. You don't have to go into great detail because obviously he's your child. You want to somewhat protect him, but he seems very wise for such a young age.
He really is. Noah's been a tough little cookie through all this, and I'm so proud to be his mom because he saw everything I did that day. And there's nothing that I could sugarcoat because he saw it all. And I've been very honest with him from the beginning of it, and we have just tried to show him the goodness that has come instead of all of the bad stuff. And, you know, like I said, he calls me his robot mom, and we joke about it. But there was a time where Noah could tell you everything that was going on around him that day. He could tell you what people were wearing next to him. But what I learned is that when we got him into therapy early, his therapist told me how important it was that kids with traumatic events that happen in their lives like this, it's so important for them to get help early on in coping with it, because that is ultimately going to make them better in the long run and make them more successful and productive adults. Mm-hmm. And that's why Rebecca's Angels kind of came into play, because I have such a passion for kids. I absolutely love kids. Being a mom is my favorite thing in the entire world. But now, knowing that PTSD is so huge and people are not familiar with it sometimes in the cases of it being with kids. And what I realized too was that I had PTSD long before Boston ever happened because of my abusive childhood. And if we can get them the funding and the resources that they need early on in life and the therapy, then, you know, that's really what my passion has become. And so Rebecca's Angels will focus on the resources with for kids with PTSD due to trauma. And we're really excited. And Noah's helping us out with that, too. He's a big part of it. So
that is awesome.
Great.
Oh, well, I can't wait to share the information because I know there will be people that want to donate, to participate, whatever you have out there. We want to get that information out there because, you know, PTSD, people think it has to be kind of like a war zone. Like, in order to have it, you got to – but it can be something like just a car accident or, you know, growing up, like you said, in an abusive home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's – it's – I guess it – when – you try to define it, it says any traumatic event that's happened, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that can be a number of things. Yes. And what we've learned is that there's so many things that affect people in different ways. But if they can get the help that they need, that's going to be so much better in the long run. And I know how much therapy has played a part in my own life. And, you know, I remember sitting down at my therapist going, okay, please tell me what I am doing wrong because I need to fix it, especially when it comes to relationships and everything else. And I was like, I need to know what red flags are. I need to know how to, you know, not attract these people. And it's been huge in my whole recovery. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we can, you know, give that to somebody else, that's really what we want to do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. I can't wait to learn more about it. So definitely keep us posted so we can continue to share that information.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, you'd mentioned about relationships. Yes. And in your book, you've had a few interesting ones.
Yes. To say the least.
And one that really caught my eye was this fairy tale wedding.
Yes. Yes.
It to most women, it would have been their dream, right? To have the paparazzi, everything paid for, you know, that reality dream thing. It wasn't so much for you.
It wasn't. It from the outside, it looked amazing. And it was a beautiful wedding. It was at the Biltmore Mansion. You know, rows and rows of flowers and petals, and I had a gorgeous dress from Kleinfeld's because I was on Say Yes to the Dress, of all things. And you know, everyone wanted, because we were there at the marathon together, my ex and I, they wanted this fairy tale, and they wanted us to be that fairy tale couple. I wanted us to be that fairy tale couple. And At that time, I was going through surgery after surgery. I was on 37 different medications. I could not even fathom someone not being the person that I thought that they were, because I needed him to be what I thought he was. Mm-hmm. And reality set in, and we had only been dating a short time before the marathon, long distance at that. And so we were in two different states. And then all of a sudden this happens. 6 months after the bombing, he proposes to me. I'm not exactly sure why. Then the world gets a hold of it, and we're on Ellen, and The Knot gives us a wedding, a dream wedding, and all of this. And it was so amazing because I felt so ungrateful if I didn't accept it. And I'm thinking, okay, people want this fairy tale after such a tragedy, and maybe we are supposed to be together because we did go through a horrific event like this, and who am I to question that? But after the wedding and after all the dust settled and we moved into our home, it just wasn't what it was supposed to be. It wasn't what everyone thought it was. It wasn't a dream. It, in fact, was the complete opposite. And I thought that I was back at my biological dad's house. And in that whole mode of I didn't deserve anything, I wasn't worth anything. And it was a very bad relationship. And I questioned whether or not to put it in the book at all, and I didn't go into a lot of detail because I don't think it needs a lot of detail. Yeah. But life is a mess, and sometimes we don't get things right the first time. Sometimes we don't get things right the second time.
Yeah.
But
or the third or the fourth sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and you do the best that you can do, and there's no recipe for it.
That's right.
There's no, you know, this is the right thing, and that's it. You figure it out as you go. And what I've learned is that I've grown so much through even that situation. And, you know, 2 days after I got my leg amputated in November of 2014, I also got a letter that would change the course of my life. And so not only did I cut out my leg, but I cut out that particular man. Mm-hmm. And my life started looking up from there. And it was like, I finally was like, okay, God, you've got me. I'm going to trust in you. Like, I can't do this on my own. Your plans are better. And when I did that, it would not, I mean, I can't even tell you how much my life changed for the better. And just within a couple weeks of that, I got a call from a speakers bureau wanting to represent me. And I started speaking all across the world even. And God was just opening so many doors for me. And I was in therapy and I was just at a really great place in my life. Then all of a sudden, after all of this time has passed, I'm on Facebook one day, and my old college boyfriend from when I was 18 years old pops up. I had never even seen him in years. And it said that he was going to be in Houston, and one of our best friends from college he was meeting up with, that I had no idea he ended up living 20 minutes away from me. So, because we all went to college in Kentucky. And so then that happened, and God brought him back into my life. And within a week, this is a person saying, I'm never getting married again. I'm never trusting guys.
Yes.
I'm going to live alone for the rest of my life.
You're going to be a nun.
I'm going to be, that, I said that.
I did.
And I was going to have stuffed cats because I'm allergic to the real ones. But the same girl, as soon as I met him again, I met him up for dinner, and I was 18, and it didn't matter what had happened in my life. It didn't matter that I went through this terrible marriage. All of that mattered was that he was right there in front of me, and God had given me another chance. And 4 months later, we were married on a beach in Jamaica. That's life. There is no recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no recipe, but God had a bigger plan.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. And what I love, you wrote in your book that, and I don't remember if it was in the acknowledgments or it was towards the very end, but you were talking about Chris and you said, yes, what I love about Chris is that he knows my heart.
Yes, he does, in every way. And it's more than saying our vows for better or for worse. Chris sees me at my worst all the time. He sees me when I don't want to get out of bed because I've had the most awful nightmare, and I'm afraid that as soon as I walk out my door, someone's going to try to kill me. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that comforts me and says, you know what? Don't put your leg on today. Let's go lay on the couch and watch 10 episodes of Jeopardy because we're old people. But that's him, and he is so compassionate, and he just cares about me in a way that no one has done that before. And I didn't have that as a child with my dad. And I know that a lot of my problems and issues has stemmed back from that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned when I went to therapy and when I sat down with a therapist and, you know, please tell me how to spot these red flags. But so it's so nice to have someone that does love me like I am supposed to be loved and loves my children the way that they're supposed to be loved. I mean, my son Noah has just clung to Chris from day one, and I've always been very careful about who I introduce him to or anything, and Noah's a very good judge of character. He really, really is, and it was just different. The minute that Chris came into our lives, it was different, and we're so excited because Chris is now adopting Noah, and We have a beautiful daughter that's 11 months old now. She's getting ready to celebrate her first birthday. And it's just a great time in our lives. And I'm so happy to be alive for this chapter, because those days where, you know, you're asking me about dangle time and everything else, yes, if you said then that I would be here today, I would not have ever believed it. But I'm so, so glad to get here.
Mm-hmm. God has blessed you truly, Rebecca, and he gave you a piece of him through Chris.
Yeah, he did.
You know, yeah, he really did. And he blessed, I know in the book, and we're not going to give all the stories because everybody's going to have to pick up their own copy of Taking My Life Back, My Story of Faith, Determination, and Surviving the Boston Marathon Bombing. There are so many stories in here. Y'all have to pick up your own copy. I'm just saying. It's more than a good read. And if you want to be on an emotional roller coaster, go for it. I'm telling you, you'll be there. You will so be there. But when I was reading that, I could see, because you talk about that after your mom and dad divorced, that God brought another man into your mom's life.
Yes.
And he, in turn, adopted you and your two sisters.
He did, yes. And so I found out early on that it isn't necessarily the dad that you have in the beginning that's going to be there for you, but there's sometimes where different people will replace that and give you the love that you deserve. And I'm always going to be so thankful to my stepdad, but I call him my dad because that's what he is. Yes. And in every way. And I'll always be thankful for a man or a woman that steps up to that plate that someone else has left behind, because, you know, I've seen what it's like in my own life, and I've also seen what it's like in my child's life. And that's something that, you know, I had struggled with for so long, because I didn't want Noah to have to experience some of those things. But where we are, it's worth it. And Noah is so happy, and Chris is his dad in every single way. And he just beams. I mean, he likes Chris better than he likes me now. So I don't know.
But that's okay. Let that happen for now, because eventually, I promise you, as he gets older, oh, he'll come back to mama. Just saying. I have three boys, so I kind of know the mother and son connection. It's precious. It is just, yes. It's precious. Very precious.
I love it.
Well, in your book also, you mention that everybody asks you, what's the secret? How did you get through all of this? You know, where did God really begin showing up in your life? Didn't you lose faith? Didn't you? What is the secret for Rebecca Gregory?
The secret is just trust. Trust that he has a bigger plan. And I say it all the time. And, you know, there was someone that asked me, well, what if you get to heaven and everything, there is no heaven? What if you get to the end of your life and you just find out that it's all for nothing? And my whole thing is, I'd rather go my whole life having faith to cling to, having God to cling to, and finding out at the end that it's not real, than going through life without it and finding that it is. And so my faith in a bigger plan and in God is what gets me up every morning. It's what makes me put on my leg and go about my day. And I have seen God so many times in my life that I absolutely could not fathom not believing in him. Mm-hmm. My son was at my feet the day of the bombing, 3 feet away from a bomb in a backpack. Mm-hmm. And he's running around like a normal kid. He had a cut to his bone on his right leg that they were able to stitch up. He had a piece of shrapnel graze the back of his head, but that was it. Noah was in the hospital for 5 days, and that was it. You would never know it. So if God's not real, then how in the world did that happen? There's been so many times, and I'm just thankful that I found it early on in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you write, you say in your book, we don't seek to be spared life's troubles. We seek to rise through them with our faith intact.
Yes. Every struggle can either turn you away from God or it can bring you closer. Mm-hmm. And I believe that he always wants us to be brought closer to him. And I look back, and every single thing that I've been through has made me the person I am today, has made me better. And that's the thing. I look back and I see all of these things that could have defeated me and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I'm able to relate on such a different level sometimes. And when I go and speak, you know, I don't just speak about the bombing. That's not the first time something's happened to me. And because of everything that I've gone through, I can say, yeah, like, I get it. Life is so hard. My life has not been easy, but my obstacles are not any greater than anyone else's obstacles. And this is just my cards that I have chosen to play this way because I'm doing the best thing that I can do for myself. And everybody has their own trials and tribulations in life, but with God, he is so much bigger than anything that we go through or anything that we fear. And so ultimately, if we trust in him and believe that he has that bigger plan, our lives are going to be more beautiful than we can ever imagine. Mm.
Very much so. And that beauty is spoken through your many blessings that he has given you. In these past, well, over your entire lifetime, honestly, he's brought you out of, like I said, they got to pick up the book because there's too many. many stories. I'm just telling you.
Yeah,
they have to read it, and then we'll just have to have you back so we can chat again because,
yes, of course.
You know, there's just so much. For those who are really struggling, because I can only imagine, you know, you're laying there in your own pool of blood. Let's make light of the situation, right? You throw Felicia around once in a while. I can only imagine where you would probably have a few one-on-ones with God saying, Lord, why? I'm going to blame you for this one. If someone's at that breaking point right now in their life, what would you share with them?
I think I would share that the devil is very hard at work. Mm. And I have learned that firsthand. For every wonderful, amazing, supportive person I've gotten, there's been a lot of people that, well, don't even think the Boston Marathon was a real thing that happened. They think it was a hoax. And yeah. I get paid billions of dollars to be an actress, and I blew off my own leg for attention. But the devil is very real. Mm-hmm. And so for everything that God wants to give us and does give us, the devil tries to take that away. And so if it's on your heart that you're mad at God, that's the devil saying, I am defeating you right now. I am becoming stronger than God in your life. And that's the scariest part. And so no matter what we're going through, I feel like we can learn so much about ourselves. And I have learned that. And I have learned about myself. And there have been times where I'm like, this is enough. Like, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. But it's also a chapter. And I go back to that all the time. Things happen, but it's not permanent. It's temporary. And so whatever is going on is a chapter in our lives. And I'm at a beautiful chapter now. And looking back over the last 4 years, there's many different parts of it where I would say I would never be where I am today. But, and it doesn't say that nothing is hard anymore, because I'm not naive to think that my life is one big fairy tale from here. Every day I have to give myself a pep talk to even walk out of the house saying, okay, Rebecca, nobody's going to try to kill you today. Mm. But with that, life is so short and there is so much more beauty. And sometimes the most amount of beauty comes from the toughest amount of pain.
That's right. There is light in the darkness when God's around.
Yes, there is. There always. Is.
Yes. And so share with us, what is one of your favorite Bible verses, or what Bible verse are you clinging to right now?
I think the biggest one I'm clinging to right now is Jeremiah 29:11, mm-hmm. for I know the plans I have for you. And it's so true, because I have often tried to make my own plans, but I have finally learned that God is in control. And when we let him have the reins in our life, our lives will be more amazing than we could ever picture otherwise.
Mm. That's so beautiful, because you stop searching for the happy endings.
Yes.
And you talk about the happy continuations.
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. Nothing is a happy ending. And there are going to be so many times where the devil tries to steal our joy. Life tries to steal our joy. And it's a constant decision that we count our blessings and not our problems. Every day I wake up and I can either be angry that this happened to me, or I can put on my leg and be thankful for that reminder that life is precious. And so that's what I continue to do. And, you know, life, there's going to be many things that knock us down. And so we're grateful for the crumbs. And I say that all the time. Sometimes those crumbs, though, can it lead us to the biggest things of all. And, you know, it is a continuation. It's another chapter. And hopefully, you know, you're not stuck in that bad place for a long time.
Mm. We don't want people to be stuck in a bad place. You are no longer stuck, Rebecca, in a bad place. And I know people are going to want to find you. They're going to want to connect with you. Where can they connect with you?
They can connect with me on social media. I'm getting better at it. It's Rebecca M. Gregory, R-E-B-E-K-A-H, M. Gregory. And I have a website, RebeccaMGregory.com. And I'm excited. I love to chat with people and just connect with as many people as I can. And it's been the best part of this whole experience, is just to hear about other people's stories.
Yes. Oh, I love it. And of course, we will have all the information in the show notes so you too can pick up your own copy of Taking My Life Back, My Story of Faith, Determination, and Surviving the Boston Marathon Bombing. I said at the beginning, Rebecca, as we're coming to a close, that in my eyes, you're an overcomer. And I truly mean that sincerely. not very many people, you know, they kind of get through. But you're truly an overcomer. This series is called My Strength is My Story. I have one last question for you. What has your story gifted you?
My story has gifted me a purpose that I could not even fathom having. And I'm so thankful to be able to find that. I just turned 30 last week.
Congratulated.
Thank you. I said the 20s blew up in my face, so 30s have got to be better, right?
Right.
But it's so true. And with all of this pain and heartache has just came this amazing purpose in my life and a platform to be able to help and encourage as many others as I possibly can. And so, you know, I have no idea what's in store for me in the future. And I think that that's an exciting part of it because I'm no longer just surviving my life. I'm living in the moment. And so whatever comes, we are embracing. And every day I just want to become better as a result. And I want to draw myself closer to Christ than the day before and just realize that life is such a beautiful thing. And I'm so thankful to be alive to see this part.
Well, you have a beautiful heart. And I am so glad that God was working overtime on April 15th of 2013.
Me too.
I mean, he spared not only your life, but he also spared Noah's. And in turn, he gave you an amazing man, Chris, and a beautiful miracle baby. Because that miracle baby that we keep calling, you know, Riley, she is so precious. She's going to be one. This is the little girl that you gave birth to. Mm-hmm. And they told you you couldn't have children.
Yes. They said because of my internal injuries, I would not be able to have another baby after Boston. And she's here.
Nothing is impossible when you have God on your side.
No.
Well, nothing. Thank you. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for spending your time with us, sharing just a part of your life. I know that you will continue to bless many others, and many blessings to you and your sweet family.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.